you know, electric utilities perspective, we want a secure, reliable delivery of electricity. So whatever we do for broadband build out or wireless co-locations or any of those things, we don't want it to jeopardize the integrity of that distribution network.
Welcome to The Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I'm Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is number 110, episode 110 of The Flux Capacitor. I've been chatting with the industry's business leaders, thought leaders, new market players, and stakeholders, the folks that have been pondering the future of how we create, move, trade, and use energy, and what the future changes will mean for electricity companies, regulators, society, and customers. I hope these conversations have given you, the listener, a sense of the conversations that are taking place in the sector. My guest on the podcast today is
Rusty Williams, President and CEO of the Utilities Technology Council.
Rusty joined me for a conversation about UTC's role in advocating for the utility industry's technological advancements. We talk about spectrum allocation, rural broadband, cybersecurity, and pole attachments. Rusty highlighted the importance of spectrum allocation and talked about potential allocation through the International Telecommunications Union, the ITU, and the importance of cybersecurity standards. He also emphasized the challenges in workforce development and the impact of AI on utility operations. We close the conversation with Rusty's recommendation for an addition to the Flux Capacitor Book Club. Here is my conversation with Rusty Williams, recorded on Zoom on March 18th, 2025. Rusty, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on.
Man, it's great to be here, Francis. I appreciate the invitation to be a part.
So why don't we start off for the listener with maybe a little bit about what the Utilities Technology Council is. Those that are in the know a lot about the UTC, but for just the usual kind of Doug out there, the dumb old utility guy, what would a short description of what the Utilities Technology Council does?
Yeah, so the Utilities Technology Council, or UTC for short, is a global trade association, and it does represent the utility industry. And when I say utility, it's electric, gas, and water utilities in the areas of technology, and that could be IT-type technologies, cybersecurity technologies, as well as telecommunications, and how the utilities across the globe really utilize those technologies for the betterment of what they do, which is delivering reliable and cost-effective utility services. But we focus in the areas of advocacy and education. Mm-hmm. We a lot of engagement between members, and then we also provide a few services to our members as well. But we're looking at it as the betterment of the utility industry as a whole, with the focus on the technology side.
Gotcha. Okay. And then so when, you know, looking at policy and advocacy issues, I know there's kind of four big streams, right? If I've got this correct, spectrum, utility broadband deployment, pole attachments, cyber and security. Those are the four main planks when you're talking policy.
It is. And I don't know if I could rank order them 1, 2, 3, and 4, but they're all important. But the one that gets the most airtime, no pun intended, is spectrum.
Yeah. Right?
So, you know, we're looking at the ability for the utilities to be able to do what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And today, in today's world, when we're looking at SCADA systems, new metering systems, you know, the ability to talk to crews, you know, you got to have spectrum to make all those things work. And, yeah. As you know, utilities have never really been given an allocation, particularly in the U.S., of spectrum. So we're out, you know, looking, begging, arguing for spectrum from all the various agencies that have a play into that. Mm-hmm. We're also looking at it from a global perspective as well. We have sister organizations in Europe and in South America.
Yeah.
And we are approaching this also from an international perspective. You know, can we go through the International Telecommunications Union or ITU and get some sort of global allocation for spectrum? So, you know, that's one of the avenues. But you're right, you know, rural broadband in particular, funding for those types of systems that many of our rural electric cooperative companies are playing in. Cybersecurity, we all know, is just a big deal for us. And we're creating a couple of programs to try to help the utilities make sure they're following standards, make sure that we can help them be more efficient, because, you know, we are all asked, where is this equipment manufactured?
Yeah.
Right? As an example.
Yeah.
And so instead of somebody having to ask 47 times, if we can come up with a way to kind of gather that information, I think we help from an efficiency play, but also just understanding the rules. I liken the cybersecurity rules and NERC-SIP and those sort of things to the IRS rules in the U.S. You know, they're purposefully vague because nobody wants to take the responsibility for them. But that, you know, that's what we do. We try to help make some sense out of it as best we can.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned pole attachments. It's the advocacy issue that keeps on giving. It's been a challenge for probably 20 years. You know, the specifics have changed and evolved over time, but trying to, you know, get the rules written and the expectations defined to where both parties, both sides of the issue can get what they need and you have some build out in systems and while protecting the electric grid at the same time.
So just maybe drill down on a couple of those. I thought, you know, when you were talking about spectrum, you mentioned, you know, the potential for an international play, potentially going through the ITU. That sounds like a terrific idea. How's that conversation, and kind of where's it at? Because it sounds, you know, if we can have a consistent approach across borders and across continents, that sounds like a terrific solution.
Yes. I mean, if you think about bureaucracy in Canada or the U.S., you know, how challenging that is sometimes when you multiply that to the global level, it makes it, you know, the math follows. It's a bit of a challenge, but we're seeing some receptiveness at the ITU just because of the need here. And when you look across some of the developing countries around the world, you know, they don't have systems or have very antiquated systems.
Right.
And so I think there's some recognition that a global allocation would be a good thing on a lot of fronts. I mean, just the ecosystems and supply chain issues, you know, if we're all working the same in the same direction, that, you know, it's much like Canada and U.S. and other countries. We, you know, there's not a single spectrum answer that solves everybody's problems.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, some companies are very urban. Some are very rural. Some companies are in the mountains. Some are in the plains. So, you know, we can't come up with a single answer, but if we come up with a majority answer and then a couple of other options, then I think that's a good thing for the industry as a whole.
Yeah.
Again, I used to, you know, I've been in this industry for 40 years. And back, you know, 40 years ago, telecom was, you know, all they knew, the utility employees was the radios and the trucks.
Yeah.
And you were kind of in the background, but today that's not the case, right? These technologies, these IT/OT telecom technologies are in the critical path for our utility companies to be successful. And so we've got to get this right and come up with the right answers for our companies so that we can not just, you know, deploy technology, but to provide these reliable services in a cost-effective way in the areas they need to be provided. And, you know, so that's been a complete flip from coming behind the curtain to being out front in the spotlight.
It's interesting. You know, you mentioned, you know, in early days, it was all about maybe the radio in the truck. Whereas today, I was at a presentation last week where somebody was talking about, you know, literally the millions of data points that are being, you know, being collected on a daily basis, and then the ability to get that data back to somewhere where it can be used, right? So this becomes the backbone. This is the kind of thing we're talking about.
Absolutely. And again, you know, with the networks in the middle where you got to have an interstate highway to handle all the data, you know, you've got to have like fiber networks and such. But on those edges where you're touching a capacitor bank or you're looking at a street light or you're trying to read a meter, you know, you don't need a lot of capacity. You don't need the 8-lane highway going in there. You just need a little country road. And you know, but as you pointed out, you're talking about millions of points. I mean, when we first started distribution SCADA in the 90s, we'd have, say, three control points on a distribution feeder. Today, every house has got a meter, every streetlight can be talked to, you've got sensors on the poles, you got all these other things, and you were exactly right. Instead of, you know, a dozen on a feeder, you've got 10,000 data points. And I think that's a big play, big application for artificial intelligence. I joke a lot that you can't, you know, go to the coffee shop without somebody saying AI. And but when you think of being able to manage that kind of data, it's going to take some intelligent system or systems to be able to make sense of all out of all of that, right? And go, oh, okay, well, here's the problem. Or in a perfect world, hey, this may become a problem. I'm seeing a trend over here, and so let's do something with this before it actually does become a problem. You know, and I think those kind of tools and AI specifically are going to take us way down that path where the historically we've depended on the humans to do a lot of that. And we all know our capabilities are finite in the human brain, but I think that's going to be a big leap forward for this industry.
Well, and I wanted to jump in on a couple of those other ones, but I did want to pause here because I do ask folks that come on the podcast about their journey. And you know I've had feedback from the you know the listeners, always interested to hear that. And so I make the joke every podcast. So this is, I don't know, the 110th time I'm going to make this joke. Rusty, when you were a kid on the playground, did you always dream of running an organization like Utilities Technology Council? What was your journey to the role that you've got today?
Yeah, I don't know that I could have even spelled UTC back in those days, but yeah, I grew up in rural Alabama, and you know, I was the prototypical first child. All right, I was the one that you know was driven, trying to achieve. It wasn't as much my parents as it was myself, you know, trying to go out and do those things. And you know, the things that I could see back then. You know, I was involved, as an example, I was involved in the Boy Scouts, you know, growing up, and you know, having that goal of attaining the Eagle Scout rank, you know, that was something I could see and was driven, you know, and unfortunately, I was able to get to that point in the Scouts. But, you know, as I was seeing those things, trying to achieve them, you know, kind of get into high school and then into college, and then into the workforce, those things that I could see and was driven to achieve built the foundation for where I am. Again, when you look at my career, though, I mean, I started, got an electrical engineering degree, and actually was a distribution engineer when I got into this business. Wasn't my initial preferred path, but you know, that was my entree. And looking back at it, that was a good thing because we learned the business, right? You learned it about the customer service part, and the primary objective is to keep the lights on and the meter spinning. So, you know, everything that from the childhood into those early years kind of built that foundation. And with that driven kind of mentality, achieve the next thing, achieve the next thing. And, you know, through the career, 25 years in the electric, you know, utility business, opted to leave to go do a couple of other things. As I turned 50 and had the opportunity to experience some different things. And then, you know, got to the point of going, okay, what, you know, is it time to retire? Do I do something else? And this opportunity came up with UTC. I had been involved with UTC when I was in the utility business, so I was very familiar with it. But I thought this was a great opportunity to give back. You know, I don't want to sound too disingenuous or noble, you know, in saying that. But it's a good career topper and an opportunity to leverage all of that for the good of the industry. So I'm doing that now. You know, we'll see how long it lasts. But you know, I feel like there's things there that I can, you know, look back on and bring to the table and help not just UTC, but its members and the industry as a whole.
Hey, you are not the first Eagle Scout on the podcast, so it makes me wonder.
All right.
I wonder what percentage of Eagle Scouts eventually go on to become CEOs. It's got to be significant.
Well, you know, I don't know that first child syndrome. When you look at the number of Eagle Scouts that are firstborn children, it's a very high percentage. But it's the same thing for corporate CEOs, astronauts, elected leaders like presidents of the US or prime ministers of in Canada or whatever. I think that's a big part of it. And again, sometimes it's the parents pushing, you know, you got to walk before you're 6 months old, or you got to be potty trained before you're 18 months old. You know, those kinds of things are kind of ingrained into that firstborn child. Knots and all these other things, you know, these high achieving career opportunities, then there is a large percentage of those that are firstborn. So I think that's probably got as much to do with it as anything.
All right. We talked a little bit about some of the policy issues, talked a, you know, a fair amount about spectrum, touched on broadband, pole attachments. Is that another one that there's a lot of similarities between the different jurisdictions? Because I mean, I know it's an on again, off again issue here in Canada. Is this something that you're seeing kind of globally, that there's I don't know, a little bit of crowding on that infrastructure and a challenge to try and establish the rules for using that some of that shared space.
Well, as far as North America goes, you know, this is primarily a distribution network issue. You know, there are attachments to transmission lines, but this is primarily a distribution pole line issue. You know, if you look around the world, different countries have different ways of regulating that. Some don't regulate it at all. You know, we've all seen the pictures of distribution lines in some of the third world countries, you know, where there's, you know, just a mirage of things. And so that's the example of what we don't want to end up with. You know, we want a highly reliable electric distribution grid. So, you know, we're trying to manage that. But at the same time, you know, this has been an issue that's been going back 20, 30 years of, you know, just back in the telecom carrier, telephone company days of attachments, you know, in the local communities. But it's just exacerbated over time because there's additional companies that are wanting to attach, and there's broadband, internet-only kind of providers. So it's a big challenge. And again, I've been around UTC for probably 20 years off and on, and this issue's been going on at that, you know, that entire time. Now, right now, it's an issue of broadband build out and, you know, having the discussions of, you know, are the rules for pole attachments impeding the broadband build out somehow or other, right? Is it, you know, in terms of engineering reviews or, you know, contract reviews or all the other things that go along with it? As with most things, I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. But, you know, from the electric companies, the you know, electric utilities perspective, we want a secure, reliable delivery of electricity. So whatever we do for broadband build out or wireless co-locations or any of those things, we don't want it to jeopardize the integrity of that distribution network. So finding those common grounds, which we think we can find. You know, I've had meetings at the FCC since I've, you know, been in this position, and trying to have that exact conversation. Where is that middle ground that we can speed up the build out of some of these systems at the same time, not jeopardize the distribution networks? I don't know that we ever make everybody happy in you know, this particular issue. Maybe if we make everybody equally unhappy, that's the middle ground that we end up with.
I often think of regulation as you know, its impact fall on a spectrum, and one side of the spectrum is it's a, you know, it's a barrier. And at the opposite end of the spectrum, it's an enabler. And you know, I think this is a good example of you know, where does regulation fall, and is it proving to be more of a barrier, or is it going to be able to enable what, I mean, we were talking earlier about the increasing needs of data, the millions of data points coming in, and so that's going to require, I'm guessing, and I'm sure you've been looking at this, a really significant build out that's going to impact how we share that infrastructure.
Yeah, when I look at it across, and this is a kind of a global high level assessment, is, you know, most utilities in the U.S. and probably around the Western world, they're not going to build out fiber, their own fiber, their own private fiber to every pole, to every home. That's
right.
Just, it's pretty cost prohibitive. Some companies do, but most do not. So you've got to have that wireless on the edge. The utilities don't, make their own problem worse with pole attachments, right? When they do build out their networks, they can do it in a way that it doesn't cause a pole attachment related kind of issue. But when others, do it, if the internet companies, a few years back, the cable TV companies, it's all about speed to market, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they want to be the first one or the second one in there, and they want to start generating that revenue. That's where the rub starts to come in a little bit. How long does it take for the distribution pole owner to do an assessment and say, yes, we can, no, we can't, or these 47 poles have to be replaced on what you want to build, for everything to be safe. And then you have the discussion about, well, how do we pay for those improvements? Is it the attacher or the pole owner or whomever? Again, I think there is a middle ground somewhere.
Yeah.
Can we find contractors that are equitable to everybody? So that every utility company or every attacher don't have to go find their own contractor.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a certified contractor, Mr. Pole Owner, then why can't we all use that contractor?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and have the same standards and those kinds of things. And then come up with some equitable model for cost distribution of all that work. Again, we're all kind of looking and pointing a little bit, going, well, you need to do this. No, you need to do that. But I think if we can get to the table and have some good, solid conversations, we can find some middle ground there that would make everybody whole and reasonably happy.
Yeah. So I imagine that that this is the sort of thing that in a lot of jurisdictions winds up in rate base, right? And so the conversation about efficiency of the process and looking at limiting the costs is in the end something that will have an impact on the customer, right?
Absolutely. And that you hit on one of the key issues here. So if I if you're the attaching entity and you come to me as the pole owner, and you've got your routes, and I decide that I need to spend $500,000 in replacing poles, then that's the argument, right? Or the discussion is, do my ratepayers, electric ratepayers, pay for the cost of changing those poles out?
Mm-hmm.
Or, should that be shared, or even burden, the burden completely be on the attaching entity? The engineering part of this, you need a 50-foot pole or you need a class 3 pole or,
yeah,
whatever it happens to be. All right. That's just a detail, right? That's an engineering issue.
Yeah.
But, how much time does it take? What's the process and who helps pay the cost?
Mm-hmm.
I think is really the key issues in the pole attack world.
Yeah. And I imagine that's universal, right? That it doesn't matter what jurisdiction you're talking about as you're working with your members around the globe. That's got to be an issue everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It is.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look globally, if you kind of back away from the advocacy issues, just having the workforce, the utilities having the workforce, particularly telecom, IT, OT kinds of requirements, it's hard to find those technology equipped individuals, that were willing to come to work for the local utility,
mm-hmm,
and can do the software development work or can do the installation of radio systems. That's been a challenge for quite a while. I know even back when I was at the utility, we would have a hard time, and we ended up hiring a lot of people coming out of the military. You would get experienced people that were used to those types of technologies. Now, these were more of the field technician type people, but those people had the experience. But when you look just in general, a lot of the younger people that are getting their educations and experience, there are certain areas that are real attractive and sexy, and there's some that aren't, to the general public. So finding those people, getting them equipped to do what these utilities need them to do is a challenge, and that's part of what UTC is trying to decide what we can do, for this that for that issue to address that issue there. Can we help with education? Can we help with information? Can we help with the recruiting? Whatever the issue, whatever the mechanism is, then we want to be able to help, our members or the industry in general to come up with a better way to find people and equip people to work in this industry. As we said earlier, though, that is now in the critical path. So we've got to find those people for the utilities to be successful going in the future.
And another area where I imagine there's a priority in terms of making sure we have people would be cyber and security. We touched on that earlier, but it's kind of I look forward to a future where increasingly AI is growing in terms of its importance. It's going to start making a dent in terms of demands for electricity to begin with and telecommunication services and so on. A world with more data centers, hyperscalers, increasing demand in that space. I imagine that's going to be putting a significant pressure as well on the need to be cyber vigilant, cyber secure.
Yeah, it's interesting when you're around for a while, and I joke about being burdened by history. We see things kind of circle around, from a historical perspective. For the last 20 years, we've been talking about a declining electric load, and when that combined with environmental pressures, we've been shutting down electric generating facilities in anticipation of a reduced load and a changing generation mix. Now, but as you said, data centers, AI, electric vehicles, other electrification opportunities. Now, all of a sudden, I've seen numbers anywhere from a 5% annual growth in demand to as high as 18% annual growth. I mean, that's just astronomical in the statistical world. So now, all of a sudden, and oh, by the way, that's not 20 years out. That's 3 years out. So, how are you going to, how are we as an industry going to provide that energy to meet that? And now, we're back looking at nuclear facilities, whether they're the large centralized generating plants or these small modular reactors, the SMRs that, may be co-located. All these things now are mixing, and it brings all of that back into this industry. And while, the telecom IT people are not directly in the critical path of that per se, but they are in terms of being able to manage those systems and control them. And if we take, the whole idea of, having these bad actors out there, spending their skills and time, doing bad things instead of doing good things, that has a direct impact on our companies being able to deliver, this electricity that we want to deliver. So cyber is something that's is key for UTC members and this industry as a whole. And we're looking at a couple of programs within UTC to help. I mentioned that earlier, but the whole key is, can we educate? Can we equip, the people that are part of this industry to do the best in protecting, the delivery of this energy? The cynical side of me goes, we've been trying to get rid of something as simple as robocalls, for, years and years, so can we actually fix this? But I do think I have the optimism that technology will evolve that will help us, overcome some of these most significant challenges in the utility industry. I don't know, maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I see the opportunities there, whether it's AI driven or it's, some other technology or some combination of technologies. I'm hoping we get to that point that, at least for the major issues that we've all been worried about most recently, then we can overcome those.
I'm here in Ottawa today. You're in Washington. I think we probably should just briefly touch on are there views around the increasing contentious relationship around tariffs, both here in North America and also now with Europe and other jurisdictions. Is it something that's being discussed, and is it a concern at UTC?
It hasn't been to this point because, the utilities, their products, their generation and delivery of product is all within North America, within the US, with the US utilities. So other than news fodder or something interesting to keep track of, tariffs are obviously there. Again, there's a few exceptions to that. There's some energy flow, electricity flow between Canada and the US. That may get caught up in a little bit of that. But quite honestly, in the utility industry, I haven't seen a tremendous amount of talk and concern about it. Again, it's out there. We don't know if it, if things go on for a long time when you're talking about, product that's got to be bought. I mean, one example, for many years, the only place that would manufacture substation transformers was in China, right? And so if you're having, to import those with a tariff, and those things are expensive, right? So a 10, 20% tariff on that turns into a lot of money when you do that. But and we're trying to overcome that, and it was already even prior to this most recent election, we were trying to help that those manufacturing issues. So tariffs per se, the other politic kinds of things, that rhetoric that's going on. It's interesting. It's out there, but we're if you're kind of heads down in the utility space, that at least from where I've been to this point hadn't been a big issue. Now, in the federal government here in the U.S., a lot of the workforce reduction, downsizing of the agencies and such, that is has the potential of creating some challenges. The shock of a change like that, even if you were in a corporation, a public corporation, then you got to adapt to that. I think that's a short-term issue. I don't think more about that than I am the tariff issues, quite honestly.
Gotcha. Hey, I do know, and I wanted to do a quick plug before we finish this off, that UTC is coming to Canada. There is the UTC Canadian Technology Conference in April in Toronto. I know that because I'm going to be there. Anything you could tell the listener about, what this would be all
Absolutely.
about, and why they should make their way to Toronto on April 14th.
Strong presence in Canada and working with the Canadian utilities. We actually had a separate entity at one point, the UTC Canada. Over recent years, for various reasons, that has kind of been reduced. But as I came into this position, a little over a year ago, and was starting to myself, there is a desire to come back and look at the Canadian issues in the industry. So we decided that it was worth, end up there, for 3 days, as you said, April 14, 15, and 16, and address the issues that's important, have an executive panel kind of open the conference the first day. We talk about regulatory issues in Canada, but even on the technology side, the things that the Canadian utilities really want to talk about or hear about, private LTE wireless networks or cloud computing or non-terrestrial networks, which is a fancy way to say satellite-based networks, AMI, the new iteration of AMI and the other things. I'm looking forward to it. I've been up there a time or two since I've been in this job, but this is the first time we've had a Canadian utility conference. So I'm looking forward to getting to meet some of the people I don't know and having those conversations. When I go to these meetings, that's what I do. I talk to people. I start at breakfast in the morning and go all the way through to the evening receptions and just find out what's important to people, what's driving them, what can UTC do. And I usually ask the question, if you were king or queen for the day, what would you do if you were in my position? And so you take all that feedback and see how we can help the individual utilities as well as the industry to, help push it forward.
All right. Listen, I always finish the podcast with a question about a book. And so we've assembled all of the book recommendations over the past 110 episodes into our Flux Capacitor Book Club. So, Rusty, the question to you is, which book would you add to people's reading list?
Yeah, I'm one of my passions is leadership development. And so I read a lot in that genre. I don't read for entertainment purposes very often. I'm reading up to learn about a skill or an industry. So I'm a big John Maxwell fan. So, I've got a lot of his books from a leadership development perspective. But the most recent one I've read, and again, not to get into the politics too deep, but it's a book entitled The Leadership Genius of Elon Musk. It's by a gentleman by the name of Dennis Neal, I think, Kneale. But it's about Elon and, Elon the man, not Elon the politician. It actually was published in October, I believe, of 2024. So learning about him, as an individual, as he was growing up, this isn't his biography. This is about, how he manages his business and, his leadership style. From the aspects of his entrepreneur, mentality and being able to take risk and all those things. But it's a very very interesting read. Or well, at least it was to me, to see how somebody could start from basically nothing and build themselves up to where he is with, the companies of Tesla and SpaceX and X, all the other companies, OpenAI. It's very interesting, and it just proves that anybody that's got the desire and a little bit of ability can do great things.
Gotcha. Okay, so we will add to the Flux Capacitor Book Club the book The Leadership Genius of Elon Musk, and it's by Dennis Neal, spelled with a K. So we'll have the link to that book on the show page. And Rusty, I want to thank you for taking the time to join the podcast, and look forward to seeing you in Toronto next month.
I look forward to that as well. Thank you for having me, and I hope we all can go forward and do great things.
For those that have been with the podcast since the beginning and those that have joined along the way, thanks for listening. Tune in for future episodes, which will include an episode about the Canada-US electricity trade relationship, as I've said on previous episodes, once we get some clarity about tariff actions by the administration in Washington, which continues to be a moving target. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen, and let me know what you think of the Flux Capacitor. You can find me through our website at electricity.ca, on LinkedIn, and on Instagram as The Brad Bradley. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca, and it includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 110. And while you're there, check out the book club page, which provides info on and links to the books which have been recommended by guests on the Flux Capacitor, including Rusty's recommendation, The Leadership Genius of Elon Musk by Dennis Neal. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.